Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. So we're reading from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, Volume 1, Chapter 3, The External Reasons for the Appearance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So I'll read the chapter introduction, and I'm going to do verses, texts 1 through 20. In this chapter, the author has fully discussed the external reasons for the descent of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Sri Krishna, after displaying his pastimes as Lord Krishna, thought it wise to make his advent in the form of a devotee to explain personally the transcendental mellows of reciprocal service and love exchanged between himself and his servants. Servants, friends, parents, and fiancés. According to the Vedic literature, the foremost occupational duty for humanity in this age of Kali is Nam Sankirtan, or congregational chanting of the holy name of the Lord. The incarnation for this age especially preaches this process, but only Krishna himself can explain the confidential loving service performed in the four principal varieties of loving affairs between the Supreme Lord and his devotees. Lord Krishna therefore personally appeared with his plenary portions as Lord Chaitanya. As stated in this chapter, it was for this purpose that Lord Krishna appeared personally in Navadvipa in the form of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Krishnas Kaviraj has herein presented much authentic evidence from Srimad Bhagavatam and other scriptures to substantiate the identity of Lord Chaitanya with Sri Krishna himself. He has described bodily symptoms in Lord Chaitanya that are visible only in the person of the Supreme Lord, and he has proved that Lord Chaitanya appeared with his personal associates, Sri Nityananda, Advaita, Gadadhar, Srivas, and other devotees, to preach the special significance of chanting Hare Krishna. The appearance of Lord Chaitanya is both significant and confidential. He can be appreciated only by pure devotees and only through the process of devotional service. The Lord tried to conceal his identity as the Supreme Personality of Godhead by representing himself as a devotee, but his pure devotees could recognize him by his special features. The Vedas and Puranas foretell the appearance of Lord Chaitanya, but still he is sometimes called significantly the concealed descent of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Advaitacharya was a contemporary of Lord Chaitanya's father. He felt sorry for the condition of the world because even after Lord Krishna's appearance, no one had interest in devotional service to Krishna. This forgetfulness was so overwhelming that Advaita Prabhu was convinced that no one but Lord Krishna himself could enlighten people about devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Therefore, Advaita requested Lord Krishna to appear as Lord Chaitanya. Offering tulsi leaves and Ganges water, he cried for the Lord's appearance. The Lord, being satisfied by his pure devotees, descends to satisfy them. As such, being pleased by Advaitacharya, Lord Chaitanya appeared. Text 1. Sri Chaitanya Prabhum Bande Yat Pradashraya Viryata Sangrinat Yakara Vratad Agya Siddhantasan Manim. Translation. I offer my respectful obeisances to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. By the potency of the shelter of his lotus feet, even a fool can collect the valuable jewels of conclusive truth from the minds of the revealed scriptures. Text. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. All glories to Lord Chaitanya, all glories to Lord Nityananda, all glories to Advaita Chandra, all glories to all the devotees of Lord Chaitanya. So in case you were wondering what we were chanting before I started the reading, that was it. That's the translation. Tritiya Shloketa Artha Kaila Vivarana Chaturtha Shloketa Artha Shuna Bhaktagana. I have given the purport of the third verse. Now, O devotees, please listen to the meaning of the fourth with full attention. This is a very famous verse coming up. Anarpita chirim charat karuna yavatirna kalo. Samarpayatam unat dojvala rasim swabaktim suryam. Hari purita sundara dyuti kadamba sandipita. Saravidaya kandare spuratu va sachinandana. Translation. May the Supreme Lord, who is known as the son of Srimati Sachidevi, be transcendentally situated in the innermost core of your heart. Resplendent with the radiance of molten gold, he has descended in the age of Kali by his causeless mercy to bestow what no incarnation has ever offered before, the most elevated mellow of devotional service, the mellow of conjugal love. This is a quotation from the Vidagdha Madhava, Chapter 1, Text 2, a drama compiled and edited by Srila Rupa Goswami. So, I've heard Prabhupada refer to this as like it's a benediction or a blessing from Rupa Goswami, because he's saying in the first sentence, you know, he's praying that may the Supreme Lord, who is known as the son of Srimati Sachidevi, be transcendentally situated in the innermost core of your hearts. That's directed towards the readers, you know, the general public. So anyway, we're going to say something more about that verse, but we'll get back to it. Text 5. Purna Bhagavan Krishna Vrajendra Kumara Goloke Vrajera Saha Nitya Vihara. Translation. Lord Krishna, the son of the king of Vraj, is the supreme Lord. He eternally enjoys transcendental pastimes in his eternal abode, Goloka, which includes Vrajadam. Purport. In the previous chapter, it has been established that Krishna, the son of Rajendra, the king of Vraj, is the supreme personality of Godhead with six opulences. He eternally enjoys transcendental variegated opulences on his planet, which is known as Goloka. The eternal pastimes of the Lord and the spiritual planet Krishna Loka are called aprakat, or unmanifested. Unmanifested pastimes, because they are beyond the purview of the conditioned souls. Lord Krishna is always present everywhere, but when he is not present before our eyes, he is said to be aprakat, or unmanifested. Brahmada ekadine tinho ekabada avatirnahana karena prakata vihara. Once in a day of Brahma, he descends to this world to manifest his transcendental pastimes. So this is talking about Krishna now. Still. Satya Treta Dwapara Kali Chari Yuga Jani Se Chari Yuge Divya Eka Yugamani. We know that there are four ages, yugas, namely Satya, Treta, Dwapara, and Kali. These four together constitute one Divya Yuga. Ekatara Chatur Yuge Ekaman Bantara Chodha Manvantara Brahmada Divasha Bitara. 71 Divya Yugas constitute one Manvantar. There are 14 Manvantaras in one day of Brahma. Okay, purport. A Manvantar is the period controlled by one Manu. And that's how many Divya Yugas? 71, right. Somebody's listening. Good. 71. And how many? How long is that? 71 Divya Yugas. Anybody know? Yeah, something like that. That's right. Yeah, 71 times 4. Point, whatever it's 4.3. So that's about right. Okay, so the reign of 14 Manus equals the length of one day, 12 hours, in the life of Brahma. And the night of Brahma is the same duration. These calculations are given in the authentic astronomy book known as the Surya Siddhanta. A Bengali translation of this book was compiled by the great professor of astronomy and mathematics, Bimal Prasad Datta, later known as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami, who was our merciful spiritual master. He was honored with the title Siddhanta Saraswati for translating the Surya Siddhanta, and the title Goswami Maharaj was added when he accepted sannyas, the renounced order of life. Bhaivasvatanama e saptama manvantara Sattaisha Chatur Yuga Tahara Antara. The present Manu, who is the seventh, is called Vivasvata, the son of Vivaswan. 27 Divya Yugas which is 27 times 4,320,000 solar years of his age have now passed. Okay, so with 27 in, we're in the seventh, by the way, and we're 27 Divya Yugas into it, 27 out of 71. Okay? At the end of the Ashtavimsa chatur yuge dvaparera sheshe vrajera sahite haya krishnera prakashe. Translation, at the end of the Dwapara Yuga, of the 28th Divya Yuga, Lord Krishna appears on earth with the full paraphernalia of his eternal Vraj Dham. Okay. At the end of the 28th Divya Yuga, Lord Krishna appears. All right, purport. Now is the term of Vaivaswata Manu, during which Lord Chaitanya appears. First, Lord Krishna appears at the close of the Dwapara Yuga of the 28th Divya Yuga. And then Lord Chaitanya appears in the Kali Yuga in the same Divya Yuga. Lord Krishna and Lord Chaitanya appear once in each day of Brahma, or once in 14 Manvantaras, each of 71 Divya Yugas in duration. From the beginning of Brahma's day of 4,320,000,000 years, six Manus appear and disappear before Lord Krishna appears. Thus, 1,975,320,000 years of the day of Brahma elapse before the appearance of Lord Krishna. This is an astronomical calculation according to solar years. Okay, so how many years elapse in the day of Lord Brahma before the appearance of Lord Chaitanya? 1,975,324,500. Right? Because he comes 4,500 years after Lord Krishna, at least did this time. Okay, text 11. Dasha Shakya Vatsalya Shringada Chari Rasa Chari Bhavera Bhakta Yata Krishna Tara Rasa. Translation. Servitude, dasha, friendship, shakya, parental affection, vatsalya, and conjugal love, shringara, are the four transcendental mellows, rasas, by the devotees who cherish these four mellows, Lord Krishna is subdued. Let me read that again. So good. A little bit rough. Servitude, friendship, parental affection, conjugal love are the four transcendental mellows, period. By the devotees who cherish these four mellows, Lord Krishna is subdued. Purport. Dasha, Shakya, Vatsalya, and Sringara are the transcendental modes of loving service to the Lord. Shantaras, or the neutral stage, is not mentioned in this verse because although in Shantaras one considers the absolute truth, the sublime great, one does not go beyond the conception. Shantaras is a very grand idea for materialistic philosophers, but such idealistic appreciation is only the beginning. It is the lowest among the relationships in the spiritual world. Shantaras is not given much importance because as soon as there is a slight understanding between the knower and the known, active loving transcendental reciprocations and exchanges begin. Dasharas is the basic relationship between Krishna and his devotees. Therefore, this verse considers dasha the first stage of the transcendental devotional service. So, this is significant. This sentence here really caught my attention yesterday when I was reading this and preparing for the class. It says, by the devotees who cherish these four mellows, Lord Krishna is subdued. So, there's a reciprocation here. In other words, it's saying, Lord Krishna is subdued. He likes it. The devotees are cherishing the four mellows, one of them, two of them, whatever. And the reaction is Lord Krishna is subdued. So there's some initiative there. It sounds like there's some initiative there on the part of the devotee. It doesn't say, you know, Lord Krishna, zaps the devotees with these four mellows, and then he likes watching how they behave. Now, it's you know, the devotees, they're cherishing these mellows. To cherish something means it's like, you know, you're doing it. Nobody's forcing you. You're not a robot. You're not an automaton. It's a choice. You're doing it. You see? And I think that's significant. And I like to actually apologize to, is he here? Sri Rag is not here. Probably, because I was kind of, I asked an aggressive question when he gave the class he gave. I hope I didn't scare him from giving more classes. But, you know, he was saying how in his class how you have to chant with some affection. And at the end of the class, I sort of challenged a little bit. And I was thinking of this thing I read in a book, Chanting Hare Krishna. It was an excerpt from a letter or a lecture Prabhupada gave where he's saying, a devotee wrote Prabhupada a letter saying, what are you supposed to think about when you're chanting? And Prabhupada wrote back, it was a conversation that was transcribed. And Prabhupada said, think about? Prabhupada said, you just hear, you don't think, you just hear the mantra. So I was thinking about that, and I was thinking, yeah, you know, what is this chanting with affection? Just hear, and then the affection will spontaneously, and that's correct, but, you know, there's another side to the story. To be honest with you, and to be fair to Sri Rag, Prabhupada also says in that address about the chanting Hare Krishna that a devotee should chant like a child crying for its mother, right? So, I mean, that instruction's there. You're supposed to chant like a child crying out for its mother. So, you know, in other words, you're chanting with some feeling. There's some feeling there. It's not like all feeling is artificial. I think I went a bit too far there. At least I did go a bit too far, and my understanding wasn't complete at that moment when I asked the question. Yeah, it's true. We don't want to become sahajas. That's for sure. You know, we don't want to self-induce feelings and emotions that we're not genuinely feeling and experiencing. But at the same time, there is feeling. You know, there is like emotion and devotional service. When we do our service, it's not incorrect. It's actually correct to try to do it with a certain feeling. You know, a feeling. Bhajatam priti purvakam, Krishna says. Who worship me with, you know, priti purvakam means loving ecstasy. So, you know, right from chanting, what to speak of offering food for Krishna. I mean, imagine you just do an offering. I used to cook offerings once upon a time. And, you know, when I did it, I was trying to do it nice. I was thinking about, I want this to come out nice, because I want Krishna to enjoy this, you know? It wasn't just like mechanical. It wasn't just like, okay, here it is. It wasn't, you know, I was like trying to do it nice and, you know, same thing. I mean, I never dressed deities, but you could see. I mean, I know that there's a lot of emotion that goes into it, because I always watch, at greeting the deities, I always see the pujaris come up and they're standing up in front of the deities and they're talking with each other and saying, oh, that's so nice how you did that. You know, they take a lot of pride in it. They're really trying to do it nicely. So, that's there. And, you know, that's what the devotees who cherish these four mellows. In other words, it's appropriate, it's correct for the devotees to do their service with feeling. And says here, Lord Krishna is subdued. He likes it. He's subdued. It means Krishna likes that. Krishna's waiting to see what kind of feeling you're going to do your service with, and he reciprocates with that. So that is, you know, totally bona fide. We don't want to be sahajas, but at the same time, you're supposed to try to do your service with some feelings. It says here, devotees cherish these four mellows, right? And Krishna likes it. Okay, so I thought that was an important point to make. Reading on. Text 12. Dasya Shakya Pita Mata Kanta Gana Lana Vraje Krida Kare Krishna Prema Vishtahana. Translation. Absorbed in such transcendental love, Lord Sri Krishna enjoys Vraj with his devoted servants, friends, parents, and conjugal lovers. Purport. The descent of Sri Krishna, the Absolute Personality of Godhead, is very purposeful. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that one who knows the truth about Sri Krishna's descent and his various activities is at once liberated and does not have to fall again into this existence of birth and death after he leaves his present material body. In other words, one who factually understands Krishna makes his life perfect. Imperfect life, this is really interesting, imperfect life is realized in material existence. This is imperfect life, okay? Material existence. In five different relationships. Now, this is a comma. imperfect life is realized in material existence, comma, in five different relationships we share with everyone within the material world. Neutrality, servitorship, friendship, filial love, and amorous love between husband and wife or lover and beloved. Hey, wait a second. That's the same thing we just heard about that Krishna, that goes on, that Krishna relishes in the spiritual world. It's the same relationships, right? But they're experienced here. These five enjoyable relationships within the material world are perverted reflections of relationships with the absolute personality of Godhead in the transcendental nature. So there it is. In that statement where you hear perverted reflection. The relationships here are just all a perverted reflection of these same relationships in the spiritual world. That absolute personality, Sri Krishna, descends to revive the five eternally existing relationships. Thus, he manifests his transcendental pastimes in Braj so that people may be attracted. And this is significant too. Thus, he manifests his transcendental pastimes in Braj so that people may be attracted in that sphere of activities and leave aside their imitation relationships with the mundane. Then, after fully exhibiting all such activities, the Lord disappears. So this is an important thing to meditate on and think about. And when we do, it'll give us impetus to be serious and try to make advancement in devotional service, because we just have to remember that the relationships here, actually with devotees, is a little bit different, or it could be a lot different depending upon how advanced we are in devotional service. The relationships between devotees aren't necessarily totally material and mundane, okay? I don't think so. It's to the degree people or devotees are advanced in devotional service, to that degree, even the relationships between devotees, even here in this quote-unquote material world, are not material. Okay, but at least for people who aren't no connection with devotional service, their relationships with each other in those rasas or in those perverted reflection of those rasas are totally mundane and totally illusion. It's totally illusion. Just to emphasize this point, I want to read a paragraph from the first canto, chapter 8 of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled "Prayers by Queen Kunti." And in the purport to that verse, very famous verse, it's the verse where Queen Kunti says, "I wish that these calamities would happen again and again, so that we can see you again and again. For seeing you means that we will no longer see repeated birth and deaths." Okay? And the purport, Prabhupada says, "Less intelligent persons prepare plans to adjust calamities without knowing that the nature of this place is itself full of calamities. They have no information of the abode of the Lord, which is full of bliss and without trace of calamity. The duty of the sane person, therefore, is to be undisturbed by worldly calamities, which are sure to happen in all circumstances. Suffering all sorts of unavoidable misfortunes, one should make progress in spiritual realization, because that is the mission of human life. The spirit soul is transcendental to all material calamities. Therefore, the so-called calamities are called false. A man may see a tiger swallowing him in a dream, and he may cry for this calamity. Actually, there is no tiger, and there is no suffering. It is simply a case of dreams. In the same way, all calamities of life are said to be dreams. If someone is lucky enough to get in contact with the Lord by devotional service, it is all gain. Contact with the Lord by any one of the nine devotional services is always a forward step on the path going back to Godhead." So, as Prabhupada's saying here clearly, the calamities are dreams. They're dreams. Let's call calamities bad times, okay? So the bad times are dreams, okay? What about the good times? Are they reality? No, I don't think so. My understanding. The bad times are dreams in material existence. The good times are dreams in material existence. And then what's left? There's maybe some in-between times or whatever. It's also dreams. The whole thing is dream. And the whole thing is illusion. Right? According to this analysis, material life is just like illusion. It's an illusion. It's just like a dream. It's just like when you sleep at night and you dream. It's not unreal. You're experiencing that. I mean, when you have a dream. But it's illusion in the sense that it's not the most important aspect of reality. I mean, when you're awake, it's much more important than what you're experiencing when you're sleeping. So in the same way, this whole material, without contact, the devotional service, Prabhupada says, if contact with the Lord by any one of the nine process of devotional service is always a step. Without contact with devotional service, material life is just a dream. It's an illusion. So we should remind ourselves of that, you know. And as I said, it should be serve as an impetus to get us to be more serious about engaging in devotional service. These relationships are just, you know, to the degree they're material and or mundane, to that degree they're just total dream and illusion. And, you know, not very important, to put it mildly. So we should really kind of focus in there on what, you know, Prabhupada's given us, the instructions of the spiritual master, really dig in, really get serious, to try to experience the reality. You know, because these relationships are there, but we want to experience them, you know, on a transcendental level. Sukham adyatikam yatad buddhi graya matindriya. It's explained in the Bhagavad Gita, 6th chapter, that real happiness is not experienced through these material senses. You know, tsakshri krishna namati nabhaved graya mindriya sevan mukhe jivado swayameva spati. That Krishna can't be understood. Devotional service can't be understood by the blunt material senses. It has to be understood by, you know, spratyada, you know, purified senses. And the beginning, of course, is the chanting and taking prasadam. But yeah, so we always have to remember that you know, these mundane relationships, it's just, you know, they're there. There's friendship, there's servitorship, there's conjugal love, it's all illusion. If there's no contact with Krishna and no contact with devotional service, it's all illusion. And we should really try to, you know, dig into the devotional service so we can experience reality. Anandam buddhivardhanam. Okay, so reading on. I think there's one other point I wanted to comment on in this purport here. I'll read on. Text 13. Yateshta vihara krishna kare antardana antardana kare mani kare anumana. Lord Krishna enjoys his transcendental pastimes as long as he wishes, and then he disappears. After disappearing, however, he thinks thus. Chira kala nahi kare prema bhakti dana bhakti vina jagatera nahi avashtana. For a long time I have not bestowed unalloyed loving service to me upon the inhabitants of the world. Without such loving attachment, the existence of the material world is useless. Purport. The Lord seldom awards pure transcendental service, but without such pure love of God, freed from fruit of activities and empiric speculation, The Lord seldom awards pure transcendental love, but without such pure love of God, freed from fruitive activities and empiric speculation, one cannot attain perfection in life. Okay. Shakala jagate mure kare vidi bhakti, vidi bhaktiye vraja bhava paite nahi shakti. Everywhere in the world, people worship me according to scriptural injunctions, but simply by following such regulative principles, one cannot attain the loving sentiments of the devotees in Braj Dham. Aishvarya janate sabha jagat misrita, Aishvarya sitila prene nahi mora prita. Knowing my opulences, the whole world looks upon me with awe and veneration, but devotion made feeble by such reverence does not attract me. Purport. After his appearance, Lord Krishna thought he had not distributed transcendental personal dealings with his devotees in Dasha, Shakya, Vatsalya, and Madhurya. One may understand the science of the Supreme Personality of Godhead from the Vedic literatures and thus become a devotee of the Lord and worship him within the regulative principles described in the scriptures, but one will not know in this way how Krishna is served by the residents of Braj Dham. One cannot understand the dealings of the Lord in Vrindavan simply by executing the ritualistic regulative principles mentioned in the scriptures. By following scriptural injunctions, one may enhance his appreciation for the glories of the Lord, but there is no chance for one to enter into personal dealings with him. Giving too much attention to understanding the exalted glories of the Lord reduces the chance of one's entering into personal loving affairs with the Lord. To teach the principles of such loving dealings, the Lord decided to appear as Lord Chaitanya. So it sounds like, so Krishna was, when he was here 5,000 years ago, what did it say here? Yeah. It says here, back in text 12, it says, absorbed in such transcendental love, Lord Krishna enjoys in Braj with his devoted servants, friends, parents, and conjugal lovers. So 5,000 years ago, when Krishna appears, he displays these pastimes, because it says here, you know, Lord Krishna enjoys in Braj with his devoted servants, friends, parents, and conjugal lovers. I don't think he was holding back at that time. I mean, he was kind of, you know, with his eternal associates, those pastimes were displayed, and essentially they were enjoyed. But yet, it says here in this purport that we just read, it says here, after his appearance, Lord Krishna thought he had not distributed transcendental personal dealings with his devotees in Dasya, Shakya, Vatsalya, Madhurya. No, so despite the fact that Krishna displayed them and he enjoyed them, I guess he wasn't satisfied with how much he distributed them based upon this statement. So now he's coming as Lord Chaitanya to distribute them. That's my understanding of this statement. And I think that's supported by the third verse in this chapter, which we read, where it says, where Rupa Goswami says, he has descended in this age of Kali by his causeless mercy, this is referring to Lord Chaitanya, of course, to bestow what no incarnation has ever offered before, the most elevated mellow of devotional service, the mellow of conjugal love. So notice Lord Chaitanya, he came to, by his causeless mercy, to bestow what no incarnation had ever given before, has ever offered before. So it was something unique. There's something unique about Lord Chaitanya, even unique in relation to Krishna. And as Krishna displayed those pastimes, he enjoyed those pastimes, but as mentioned here, he wasn't satisfied himself. That he felt like, well, I don't think I've distributed them enough. And so that's he came as Lord Chaitanya to now distribute those pastimes. And then it goes on to say, in the next text, how does he distribute them? Okay, well, it goes on to say, Aishvarya jane vidi bhajana kardiya vaikuntake yuya chaturvida muktipana. Translation, by performing such regulated devotional service in awe and veneration, one may go to Vaikuntha and attain the four kinds of liberation. Sharshti Sarupya Ara Samipya Salokya Sayujanalaya Bhaktiyate Brahma Aikya. These liberations are Sharshti, achieving opulences equal to those of the Lord, Sarupya, having a form the same as the Lord's, Samipya, living as a personal associate of the Lord, Salokya, living on a Vaikuntha planet, and says, devotees never accept Sayuja, however, since that is oneness with Brahman. And then the purport Prabhupada says, we're getting to the answer of my question here, but how does he distribute it? It's coming up. Those engaged in devotional service according to the ritualistic principles mentioned in the scriptures attain these different kinds of liberation. But although such devotees can attain Sharshti, Sarupya, Samipya, and Salokya, they are not concerned with these liberations, for such devotees are satisfied only in rendering transcendental loving service to the Lord. The fifth kind of liberation, Sayuja, is never accepted even by devotees who perform only ritualistic worship. To attain Sayuja, or merging into the Brahmana fullness of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the aspiration of the impersonalist. A devotee never cares for Sayuja liberation. Okay, we got that. Text 19. Yuga Dharma Pravartimu Nama Sankirtana Chari Bhava Bhakti Divya Nachamu Bhuvana. Translation. This is Lord Chaitanya speaking now. Oh, this is Krishna speaking. Sorry, and he says, I shall personally inaugurate the religion of the age, Nam Sankirtan, the congregational chanting of the holy name. I shall make the world dance in ecstasy, realizing, here it is. I shall make the world dance in ecstasy, realizing the four mellows of loving devotional service. Okay? No purport. But I'll say something about that. So this is the way in which Krishna distributes those four mellows. He's saying it here. He's saying it. He says, I shall personally inaugurate the religion of the age, Nam Sankirtan, the congregational chanting of the holy name. I shall make the world dance in ecstasy, realizing the four mellows of loving devotional service. So that's how he does it. That's the process, how Krishna, as Lord Chaitanya, distributes those four mellows by the Sankirtan movement. And we have some experience of this. little experience. Real little experience, but something's better than nothing. When we go on Sankirtan, when we go on Harinam, I can't help but always notice, you know, this, how many people. I mean, we're just a little group, but we always get at least a dozen people who just, they can't restrain themselves. They just got to jump out there. They jump out there and they start dancing. You know, they don't know the mantra, so they can't. Most of them don't chant. But, you know, this is just, and I'm talking about not just kids. Sometimes, like, you know, grown-ups, people, you know, you wouldn't be surprised. You never know who's going to just all of a sudden jump out in front of the chanting party, and they just, and there's plenty of people who can't restrain, or can restrain themselves, but, you know, you can see them just kind of like as they're walking by, they do it a little bit, you know, they kind of, but then they're kind of like embarrassed, so they hold back. And there's some people who just can't hold back. They just can't restrain themselves, and they just, you know, they just all of us just come forward and start chanting with us, and some do it for like, you know, 10, 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes. So, I don't know, it's something, you know, when I see that, I just think, well, there's something there. I mean, so many different groups out there performing this and that, and I don't see that kind of participation, you know. There's something special about the Harinam, and there's something special about taking it out to the public. You know, the kirtans here in the temple room, that's special, for sure. And there's something even more special when you take it out to the public. It's like, you know, Krishna, Lord Chaitanya just turns up the ecstasy or something like that, because that's it. He wants that. He wants the chanting to go out there and people to see it, and not just see it, but participate in it. And they do. They do. You know? And the more of us that go out there, you know, on the chanting party, and the more we, you know, it's practice, you know, the expression practice makes perfect. Well, you know, you go out there and every week it's the same thing. We get better at it. You know, you get your tunes down, and you get your you get it down, and it becomes, the chanting party becomes more potent and more effective, and more people participate. Generally, we have like between 12 and 24 devotees going on the chanting party, depending upon the time of the year. You know, in the summer months we get more. But imagine if we had like 50, you know, something like that. I mean, it would be powerful. And you know what? We have good spots. I mean, if the two places we go down to Santa Monica and we go to Hollywood. And in the summer months, in the warm months of the year, there are tens and thousands of people. I mean, you talk about, like, you know, getting it out there. We have tens and thousands of people passing us on any given evening. You know, sometimes in the summer they have these concerts down on the pier, the Santa Monica Pier. And we stand in one spot, and literally there's like, it's solid people for about from here. It's about as wide as from here to the other side of Prabhupada's Vyasa, no, maybe this side of Prabhupada's Vyasasan. And it's just like, for like 2 hours. It's just, you know, they can't help but see us and hear it. It's just a solid stream of people. Thousands, literally. I don't know how many thousands, but it's thousands. And Hollywood is like that all year round. There's just literally thousands of people out there. So it's a really important preaching program, something we could take advantage of. You know, we're here, we have great spots. And we have like a very dedicated person now who's, you know, following up on that. Sri Madhava Mahotsava is really, you know, taking it very seriously. You make sure the chanting party goes out no matter what. So I'd like to encourage everybody, take this opportunity, since we're reading about this. This is how Lord Chaitanya, as it says here, you know, this is how Lord Chaitanya distributed these rasas, you know, by making the world dance in ecstasy. So the world's not going to dance in ecstasy until we're dancing in ecstasy first. We have to get out there and show them the example. We have to get out there and dance in ecstasy, and then they'll follow our example. And then this way, we will, and they will, realize the four mellows of loving devotional service. Okay, so then the last verse is, Apani Karimu Bhakta Bhava Angikare Apani Achari Bhakti Shikaimu Sabare. This is a famous verse. I've kind of vaguely recognize that Sanskrit. I shall accept the role of a devotee, and I shall teach devotional service by practicing it myself. You see, so that's Krishna speaking, and that's a principle, you know, that's what we're supposed to do. Lord Krishna is saying, I'm going to teach it by practicing it myself. So same thing. We got to teach it by practicing it ourselves. We got to practice it very seriously, and then then we'll be able to teach it. It'll have potency. Let's read the purport there. When one associates with a pure devotee, he becomes so elevated that he does not aspire even for Sarshti, Sarupya, Samipya, or Salokya, because he feels that such liberation is a kind of sense gratification. Wow. Pure devotees do not ask anything from the Lord for their personal benefit. Even if offered personal benefits, pure devotees do not accept them, because their only desire is to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead by transcendental loving service. Just can't help it. One pastime comes to my mind upon reading that. There's that story where Rupa Goswami, yeah, he was doing his bhajan, and he was out in some kind of secluded place, you know, and he's just doing his bhajan, and he didn't have like, you know, he wasn't really paying much attention to his own maintenance or anything like that, his own upkeep. And then one day some girl came, and she brought like a whole... Oh, no. What happened was Rupa Goswami was desiring to do some service for his brother Sanatan Goswami, who he considered like his spiritual master, okay? So he was thinking like, oh, but, you know, I'm just a baba. You know, I'm just out here in the forest. What can I, you know, how can I serve my brother? I have no facility. He was thinking like that, okay? And but then shortly after that, some young girl came and brought a whole bunch of ingredients. And Rupa Goswami goes, oh, who are you? You know, I'm some girl from the village. You know, what is your name? I don't know you. He says, no, it's okay. My family, we had some festival. These were extra ingredients. So, you know, we wanted you to have this. So you're a very nice girl, but who are you? Anyway, you know, and she just left the things and she went away. And Rupa Goswami thought, okay, coincidence, nice. You know, now I can prepare something nice for my brother. So he prepared a nice, you know, prasadam, and he invited Sanatan Goswami. And Sanatan Goswami came, and Rupa Goswami was serving Sanatan Goswami. And so Sanatan Goswami, he's going, oh, that was very nice, thank you very much. You know, and he's, but where did you get all these, where did you get the ingredients? And Rupa Goswami goes, oh, some nice young girl came, very nice girl, very nice. And she's very beautiful, very nice. And she came and she brought all these ingredients. And he said, oh, really? Describe her. And he said, oh, well, she looked like this and she was like that. And he started describing her. And Sanatan Goswami goes, oh, no, you've made a great blunder. That was Radharani. And he said, you've taken service from Radharani. You know, so they were, and they're both very upset then, because you know the idea was these advanced devotees, they don't want to take any service, they just want to give service to Krishna, and then when they realized had been tricked by Radharani, they had accepted some service, they were very upset about that. They didn't, you know, that was their mood. That no, we don't want to accept any service. We just want to serve Krishna. We don't want to accept any service from Krishna. We just want to serve Krishna, like that. So anyway, reading on here, it says here. No one but the Lord himself can teach this highest form of devotional service. Therefore, when the Lord took the place of the incarnation of Kali Yuga to spread the glories of chanting Hare Krishna, the system of worship recommended in this age, he also distributed the process of devotional service performed on the platform of transcendental spontaneous love. To teach the highest principles of spiritual life, the Lord himself appeared as a devotee in the form of Lord Chaitanya. Yeah. One final thought, and then I'll end. That on this point, the first point I was making about how it's not only acceptable; it's supposed to be performing the service with feeling, and. Figure out how I'm going to lead into this. We have to be careful. When I was reading this yesterday, and when that understanding dawned on me, I realized, whoa, I got to be careful. Because, in other words, there's devotees, like the, I'll say it like this. The gopis were not scholars. The gopis were not kshatriyas. The gopis were not sannyasis. You know, they were actually village girls. They were just plain old, ordinary village girls. They weren't sannyasis, GBCs, or guru. You know what I mean? They were just plain old, ordinary village girls. Socially, they had no social status, practically speaking. But they're the greatest acharyas. You know, they are the most, you know, there's that famous verse by Lord Chaitanya. I don't remember the Sanskrit, Vajravido. Maybe you know the Sanskrit to that one. You know, about where he says about, you know, Yeah, that, and there's another one too. But, you know, Varjana, I can't remember the Sanskrit. But the gopis are the highest. You know, Lord Chaitanya was glorifying the, you know, the devotional service of the gopis. So, Ramya Kachit, Vrajavado, I can't remember the same. But anyway, so the point is, so. Thank you. Translation? Right. So anyway, getting back to my point, so when this understanding dawned on me, I was thinking, oh man, I better be careful. You know, I'm getting, like, thinking so much rules and regulations and strict this and strict that. And I'm thinking, you know, in the meantime, I'm looking at these devotees who are expressing these feelings and everything, and I'm thinking, eh. But hey, they could, that could be genuine devotional feeling. You know, in other words, like the gopis, as I said, they weren't big shots. The gopis were just very simple village women, but they were the greatest devotees. So in the same way, you know, we're associating with people, they're expressing devotional sentiments. We don't know who they are. You know, they could be very genuine sentiments. They could be very genuine expressions of devotional service. You could be rubbing elbows, you know, rubbing shoulders with people who are actually very, very advanced in devotional service, despite the fact that they might not have any great social standing. That is irrelevant. So that was something that I thought of that occurred to me, and I'm going to try to be more conscious of, and I just wanted to share that with everybody else. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments about any of these things? Yes, over there.
And so in this way, by having that appreciation, we can have affection towards first starts with Guru. So our first appreciation and affection starts like this. So it's not like a far-fetched thing, and it will gradually come. But those devotees who might express it, we should just see it as an example where we have to go.
Thank you. Excellent comment. Thank you very much. Anybody else like to say anything? Brahma Sankirtan? I get the mic coming here.
Hare Krishna. Is it explaining purports how only by knowing pastimes of Krishna, you know, appearance, disappearance, they can go home back to Godhead. But in the same time, explain then you can go back to Godhead only if you don't have any material desires. That means you get actually Krishna Prem. When you get Krishna Prem, you can go home back to Godhead. So how you can put these two together?
Repeat the question.
My question is explain how this verse in Bhagavad Gita, only by knowing knowing Krishna's disappearance and appearance, you can go back to Godhead.
Mm-hmm.
This from, is it? Fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita.
Okay, Janma Karma.
Janma Karma, okay. But at the same time, it's explaining how only by pure devotional service, when you get Krishna Prem, you can go home back to Godhead, not before that. So
I'll just make one brief comment, and then I'll ask Amla Bhakta to bless me with some chastisement. But, Maharaj, I think when it says no, the pastimes, it's just referring to just more than, like, you know, some very superficial academic, intellectual, theoretical understanding. And knowing in the sense of, like, you know, you're like, just like to hear means to apply it. So to know means, like, you know, you're living the life. You're not just, oh yeah, I heard about Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill or killing Putana or whatever, you know. Nice. And you know, that's not what qualifies you to go back to Godhead. It's when you learn those things, and you take shelter of them. You know, you have some provisional faith, and you take shelter of the process of devotion. And you try to be a devotee. You hear those things, and you try to be a devotee based upon your willingness to put your faith in those, that those are true things, you know, about Krishna. And then that's what is your qualification for going back to Godhead. Not just that you got the information. You heard that, you know, you heard the information. Maharaj?
From this question, if I understand it right, my understanding is that if a person is experiencing ongoing, non-stop Krishna prema, then he's continuously attached to Krishna. He's always thinking of Krishna. He's always remembering Krishna. And remembering him means also remembering his pastimes. Where else can he go when he leaves? That's his whole consciousness is revolving around or circulating around Krishna and all of his activities. So for he's a part of that already. Feeling a part of that, he has no other place to go. The material concept, the material ideas, the material feelings are completely shut out because the false ego has been demolished. And all there is pure ego. Pure ego simply lives for the loving service of Krishna. That's what it's supposed to be. Nitya Jivetasvarupahai Krishna Nitya Das. So, therefore, he will naturally, if he has real ongoing Krishna Prema. Now, we have also, as we're reading the Bhagavatam, we have... Narada Muni had an experience, but that's not ongoing Krishna consciousness. Krishna gave him a glimpse of what is to come if he continues in the process of devotional service. So that would be an incentive to perform more and more and more intense devotional service. And of course, having had that experience, such a person would want, of course, to continue not only to have the experience, but for the overall satisfaction and security and peacefulness and joy that it gave him, he would want to continue. And actually, that's what does happen. When he has to leave his body, it's mentioned in the text and the purport that Narada Muni leaves in a transcendental body. What's a transcendental body? It means all the senses which have been closed and inactivated due to material energy have now been opened and activated and are now functioning on the plane of simply, as you were mentioning, wanting to give loving service to God. Anything else is anathema, is damnable. And everything that he can think of is. And so Krishna Prema presupposes a lot of work that you put in and a lot of gradual experiences of joy, of satisfaction, of love of Krishna. It's not just a word. It's an experience which propels you like an iron filing is propelled, you know, towards a magnet. Similarly, the devotee who's experiencing ongoing, not just a glimpse as Narada got, but an ongoing, he's actually in it. He has no other place to go but to the spiritual world.
Thank you. That's an excellent way to end the class. Thank you very much. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai. Guru Premanandi Hari Hari Bo.
Yeah, you know, it's like
following in the, you know,
yeah, that's
yeah, auspicious.
So it's a Krishna's blessing.
Yeah.